attempts in the early 20th century to reach the North Pole by the air, by airplane, and even by dirigible. Some of those efforts ended in tragedy. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that focuses on the concerns in the Tri-County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning, and welcome to Community Matters. I'm Marcia Connett, your host, and I am so glad that you've joined me today, because with me today, I have three very special guests. We're going to be talking about the Danny Did Foundation and the work that they do, but I'd like to begin with our first guest, Caroline Pratt. And Caroline, I'm going to just let you introduce yourself and tell your story about what we're talking about today. Caroline?
Thank you for having me here today, Marcia. My name is Caroline Pratt. I was diagnosed with epilepsy when I was 8 years old, and right now I am 22. So I have been living with it for, since then. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah, one time. You've got a lot of experience.
So I guess my story is about not giving up and working through.
Sure. Tell me how it was living with epilepsy as a young kid.
I didn't know what it was at first. My mom and dad did, because I'd had a couple of seizures, when I was much younger, when I was, in preschool, and they took me to the doctor, who had said it was epilepsy, and he'd wanted to put me on a bunch of medications, and my mom and dad were like, no, she's a toddler.
oh, goodness.
And they just went away until I was 8. And then when I was 8, I started noticing that I would, that my shoulder would be jerking and I couldn't make it stop. And I wasn't cold and I didn't think I had a fever. And so I told my parents and they were just like, yeah. We know.
Interesting. I didn't realize that there were those kinds of symptoms that came with epilepsy. Is that common?
Those aren't really symptoms. Those are seizures. Those are called petite malls.
Yep.
They're like smaller seizures. You're awake. You're present. You can also be staring, you're having a seizure.
Interesting. I think most of us in the uninformed world, when we think about a seizure, we think about what to you is a grand mal seizure, where, you may end up on the ground or you may be completely out of it. But these petite seizures could just be, I would think as a teacher, I would look at you and think, oh, you're just not paying attention. Or, you're just lost in thought somewhere. Did you run into that kind of problem as a kid, or were your teachers aware?
We always made my teachers aware. I think my parents did when I was younger, and then in high school, they made sure I went to all my teachers and they told them, I have epilepsy, and just so they would know what was going on if I ever had a seizure at school.
Sure.
I did have a seizure at school a couple of times. And you're right. Those are like, that is what a grandma mall is, like convulsing.
Sure.
And
what about the kids in your class? Did they know? Were they aware? Did you feel, and did they feel any differently about you or you about them?
I never wanted, like, I was actually terrified for most of my education for them to know.
Sure.
And so the kids in my class were not made aware until my junior year when I had a big seizure in front of everybody, and so my school had us hold an assembly just so, like, we could explain it to them so they knew what was going on.
Wow.
And I didn't want to speak, like, because I wanted to pretend it wasn't happening, and so my mom told them.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And I remember, like, just being completely astonished, and, like, all my fear melted away, because all they did was, like, ask, how can we help if this happens again? Like, they just asked questions, and, like, none of them were... Because I think my fear had been based off of, like, you know, the stigma from, like, all those high school movies. Like, they will mock you. They will make fun of you. And,
right.
Like just because you're different. And they weren't doing that. They were asking how they could help. They were asking if they could do anything. And
that's really impressive.
And it was really cool. And after that, I wasn't scared to, like, let people my age know.
Boy, that I am absolutely blown away that you got that sort of response from your fellow student. I guess I shouldn't be, but you know, and it had to have been just a huge weight off of your shoulders.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Are there things that you couldn't do in school because of your health issues?
I wouldn't say there were things that I couldn't do. I did have accommodations because I have what is called a slow processing speed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, especially, well, I think especially, like, when I know I'm being timed, like, I'll like, take longer on a test and I won't be able to finish it in the time they've given me, so... Like, they would give me extra time to finish the test.
A time test, sure.
And I think that was my only accommodation.
Okay. As you got...
Oh, yes, I did also stop attending gym class because I started...
That was going to be my next question. Is there a reason not to participate in, like, something active like a gym class?
I wouldn't, like, I. There are plenty of people with epilepsy who participate in gym class, who do sports. I would not say that there is, but for me, like, I participated in gym class all the way up until my senior year. I didn't want to. I hated it. I was terrible at it. But I participated in it, and I was a figure skater. And then in my senior year, I just started having a bunch of seizures, like, in gym class. Obviously, the gym teacher cannot teach gym if she's busy focusing on one child who is having a seizure. And so they just gave me a free period and a pass for gym class. So that the gym teacher could teach the other kids gym.
Okay, well, makes all the sense in the world. Are there triggers that maybe bring on seizures, or is it just so random?
For a lot of people, there are. Okay. For me, I'm hoping there's a trigger, but so far, we have not found it.
Okay, so yours just come out of the blue.
Yeah, we never know.
I had a young woman on my radio show years and years ago who had a seizure dog who was able to detect when she was about to have a seizure so she could go and lie down. Have you heard about that? Is that anything?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. Is that something you'd be interested in doing, or are you not at that point that you don't find that necessary?
I don't find that necessary for me. I do believe my cat, who is not trained in any way, can detect my seizures, and he's good enough for me, I think.
Okay.
So.
That's perfect. I think
I live with other people, like my mom, who can help me with my seizures.
Sure.
So.
Sure. Makes sense. Yeah, I think animals are surprisingly sensitive, especially when they're connected to their human, surprisingly sensitive to those kinds of things. So that's pretty cool. Are there things that you can't do as an adult because of this? I mean, you finished college, right?
I did. I graduated in December 2022.
Oh my goodness! Congratulations! Yeah. How was your college experience?
It was good. Nothing extraordinary. I am very much an introvert, so. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I get that.
Yeah, health-wise, they were very accommodating. As an adult, I'm not allowed to drive because I have active seizures. I'm pretty sure if you have a history of epilepsy and you are not currently having active seizures, for a certain period of time, you can take a driver's test, and if you pass, you can then drive. But that's never been the case for me.
Okay. Are you looking forward to?
I can't swim alone. I'm sorry for interrupting you. I never drink a lot.
Going to ask about that. Yeah, in terms of your college years, I would think alcohol would not be a good mix with what you're living with. Okay. Are you ever interested in driving?
I think I'd like, if I was ever able to, I would like to drive. Because right now my main methods are of transportation are other people driving me around and walking.
Sure.
So,
but that's what you know. Yeah, that's your life.
One of my favorite memories is actually when my uncle let me drive his ATV. I told him I couldn't because I had epilepsy, and he was just like, okay, I'll sit in the passenger seat, and if you have a seizure, I'll put my arm across your chest and
I'll take over. Okay.
And that probably would not have gone well if I had actually had a seizure. But like everybody else would have just said like flat out no.
Right.
And so it meant a lot to me.
That is very cool. Yeah, that's very cool. What if you were to share with another person who shares your medical condition, who has seizures, what kind of advice would you give them?
I would tell them not to be afraid, not to give up, and like to keep getting back up, because like you hit the ground a lot and you get a lot of bruises, and it sucks, like, both mentally and physically, because you come back from the seizure and you feel like you can't do anything, and it sucks, but
sure.
You have to keep remembering that you can do this, you've been doing this, and you're awesome, and you're stubborn, and you're gonna keep doing this. And what my mom and I like to say is that we are stubborn as hell.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, you are amazing. I am just so in awe of the way you can live your life, and are just living every day. That's really incredible. What I'd like to do now is talk to your mom, to Ashley Henricks. And Ashley, can you go back to when you first realized something wasn't okay with Caroline when she was so little?
Sure. Well, it was kind of a, there was no mystery. She was changing her clothes when she was four, and I had a newborn and her younger sister as well, and I was a stay-at-home mom, and she went flat on her back, and her eyes rolled, and I was, terrified because I had no idea what was happening, and so I called 911 right away, and she ended up having about four seizures over the course of a couple months, and as she shared, the neurologist we saw at the time scared her dad and I quite a bit with the level of medication he wanted to put her on, and it would have been for a minimum of 2 years, and she was our oldest child. We had just no experience at all with this, and so we did go a more holistic route with supplements, and for whatever reason, she her seizures were dormant for 4 years until she was eight, as she said, and then she thinks of the jerking, but I recall that she went for an eye exam, and she was looking at in the little viewfinder, trying to find the dots, tell me where the dots are, and her whole head started shaking, and so I called her pediatrician right after the appointment, and she connected us to a neurologist, and she was officially diagnosed after more testing, but she is certainly my hero, and she has been on a cocktail of medications since she was eight, and has also had a VNS implanted in her chest to send electric impulses to her brain in another attempt to control her seizures, which have not been, we've not been successful yet in that.
Okay.
She, as she said, lives her life and graduated with honors from Carthage, and what she didn't mention about that experience is she actually had a seizure right before she was supposed to present her senior thesis, and recovered, realized she had enough time yet to get to class, so got up and walked from her dorm room to her classroom and successfully presented it.
Amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
No, many, many reasons to be proud. Now, you mentioned a VNS. Tell us what that is and what it should do.
Sure. It's a vagus nerve stimulator, and it's a device that, and then it's implanted in her, right around her breastbone, and it's connected to wires that go up into her neck, and can adjust the frequency of the electric impulses that shoot into her brain based on, her specific frequency and condition and her needs. So they can adjust both the the severity of the pulses and the timing of the pulses. And, the hope is that it greatly reduces seizures. And for some patients, they're able to then wean off of medications and just rely on the VNS, which also comes with a large magnet that you can swipe across it during a seizure in an attempt to, halt it or at least shorten it. So she's had that for a couple of years now, and we've had some good success, which seemed to we've kind of regressed, I would say, over the past 6 months. But that's what her neurologist and then her, the surgeon who implanted it, that was the goal of that procedure.
Wow. Is that a fairly new way of managing epilepsy?
It's not entirely new. I know her neurologist told me. Yeah, but I think it's probably been around for at least 20 years. So,
oh,
Yeah, and it's, you know, one of the surgical options depending upon cases. Obviously, there's also, you know, brain surgery for those who are eligible or qualified. One other unique piece of Caroline's history is that she has generalized epilepsy as opposed to focal epilepsy. And generalized means that when she has a seizure, the neurons misfire all over her brain. So there's not one spot that it starts. So it's even harder to treat than focal epilepsy, which you can tend to pinpoint, you know, which lobe or which location of the brain is, you know, the seizures start in. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, we've got a couple of minutes before we have to take a quick break. But tell me, as a parent, what you went through in those early days, say when, well, obviously when she was four, but more specifically when she was eight and the diagnosis was determined.
You can imagine it was, you know, incredibly scary for us. And a couple of her earliest seizures when she was four, as she mentioned, she has no triggers. So, you know, at one, and then of course others have happened since, but one of them, she just went backwards onto the kitchen floor, you know, so then she hit her head. So then there's a worry of concussion and, you know, other injury. And, you know, she's mentioned she's had multiple injuries as well from seizures that come out of nowhere, even when we're standing next to her. So that's been, I think, the scariest part is that she has no predictability. And, you know, so we're always kind of on guard. But we have been very, very blessed to be connected to special people, advocates, and organizations that that have helped us throughout this journey and continue to do so. So I really can't say enough about those people and those organizations as well.
Well, and that is a perfect segue into our second half of the program. But right now, I just want to remind you, you're listening to Community Matters. I'm Marcia Conant. This is WGTD 91.1. And we are talking with Caroline and Ashley, and soon we'll be talking with Mary Duffy. And the subject today is epilepsy, both from the standpoint of the patient, the person who lives with it, the parent, but now we want to talk with Mary about some of the organizations that Ashley just mentioned, or at least one in particular. So Mary, good morning. We're so glad you're here.
Good morning, Marcia. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Now you represent an organization called, and I hope I get this right, Danny Dids. Is that correct?
Sure. It's called the Danny Did Foundation.
Okay.
We're located in the northwest side of Chicago. I mentioned that because that's where Danny lived, and the namesake of the foundation comes from Danny Stanton. Danny was my son's first friend. I'm very close to his parents. They're my neighbors. And Danny was lost, unfortunately, at age four to something called SUDEP, which stands for Sudden Unexpected Death in Epilepsy. At that time, Danny's parents had never been educated on SUDEP, never heard of that risk. So they were really blindsided at Danny's passing. It added to the grief. And really what they found out pretty quickly was that they weren't alone, that unfortunately this tragedy of sudden death was happening across the area and frankly across the country and world is what we discovered. And this lack of disclosure was common. And they really just wanted to figure out why that was happening and what could they do to help encourage this very important discussion to happen in the clinician's office with patients or their caregivers. So really went ahead right from a kitchen table in Danny's kitchen to develop this answer, really to fill these gaps. And that's kind of how they decided and determined which programs they would offer.
So how common, I have never heard of Ceuta, and I'm sure I am not alone.
Yeah.
How common is it?
Yeah, you're not alone. And even with the epilepsy community, families have told us, you know, they've been living with epilepsy for years and years and years, 30 plus years, and they had never heard of that, you know, one in 1,000 deaths can be caused by Ceuta. And it is the number one cause of death for patients who live with epilepsy.
And how many people across the globe, and maybe you know this, maybe you don't, have epilepsy?
Across the globe, it's the figures between 50 and 60 million.
50 or 60 million.
Yeah.
That's a huge number. And if you think of, you know, 90% of them didn't know this thing even existed. Wow.
Right. And I think it's close to 3 or 3.5 million in the United States. But when we started and mentioning this and families telling us we were not prepared either, meaning we hadn't heard this discussion, we didn't have the chance, and that's what Mike and Marianne often say, is we just want to give families a chance to keep their loved ones safe. And we, of course, feel that that comes from these very important discussions, which, of course, lead to, well, what are some ways I can try to mitigate this risk?
Right.
And that came to our second program, which Mike and Marianne said, was there something that could have been used in the bedroom that night that could have alerted us to a seizure? And the any seizures were tonic-clonic seizures, and that means that they had movement convulsions with his seizures. Mm-hmm. And they soon learned that there were devices, technology that existed that could sound an alarm to a caregiver, so that they can come to their aid during a seizure, regardless of Ceuta. Nobody wants to be alone during a seizure. So it is good to have a tool in place that can alert mom and dad or whoever the caregiver might be, that they can rush to the room. And sometimes that involves seizure first aid. Sometimes it involves rescue medications, so that similar to what Caroline was mentioning with the VNS, there's medicine that also can be given that would help to prevent seizures from going on too long and requiring a trip to the hospital, ambulance, things like that. So,
wow.
And then just repositioning of the person as well sometimes can help, and evaluate the situation and let caregivers then decide what's the next step here for the seizure response. So
okay.
The reason I bring that up is that we have different programs. One, of course, is this campaign that we are always on, raising both epilepsy awareness, letting patients know they are seen, they are heard. These numbers are large numbers, and they deserve better. They deserve more attention. They deserve more care. They deserve just more than they're used to receiving. And the reason I bring that up is because we like to be a place that they can come to and hear the word yes. And one of those ways is that seizure detection devices are at market, however, not always affordable for families and not covered by insurance. So we're able to say to a family, if you fill out this application and we have an interview with you to learn a little bit of more about your need, we can help you purchase that seizure detection monitor if that is something that is out of reach for you financially. And we've been doing that for I neglected to say we started in 2010, so 15 years of helping families all across the United States. We're into, I think, 17 countries as well where we've helped families. So that seizure detection device program has really grown. We've really become the number one resource for that, the place that both doctors and other advocacy groups and families themselves talk about this resource and encourage people to reach out to the Danny Did Foundation for that financial assistance.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. So how do you raise the money that you are able to help people get these devices, and I guess we should talk about any other things that you help families do that
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a couple of different programs. The awareness program I would say that it's twofold. You know, once we have the awareness of what we want to do there is educate the general public so that everybody's aware of the seriousness of epilepsy. With numbers, you know, that 1 in 26 Americans will develop epilepsy in their lifetime, you're going to run across somebody in your lifetime that experiences either seizures or, you know, have a diagnosis of epilepsy. And what does that mean? You know, what would you know how to respond? So we just want to make sure people are well aware of the risks, well aware of seizure first aid. And if they're not, then seeking education in that. And that suit up exists. I mean, it's a tough conversation to have. It's a tough program for us and mission for us to discuss something as serious as suit up. But we come at it with the angle of educating and raising awareness and hopeful that you can live a good life and with safer outcomes by being educated, removing barriers that might be in the way of you avoiding your triggers or not taking your medication, things like that. So really, if the conversation is not happening in the doctor's office, we'll take it to a very public setting and a very busy setting. And what I mean by that is we have billboards in international airports, 10 of them last year, 10 different airports, billboards on busy highways. We have media, we have streaming TV commercials. We're on public radio in Chicago and LA. We have a bus that's wrapped, a CTA bus, or city bus, I should say, that's wrapped in our messaging with suit up facts and epilepsy facts and a big picture of our Danny to catch some people's eye and want to know a little bit more about what's on that bus or what's on that billboard. And then they say to themselves, hey, my next door neighbor has epilepsy. I'm going to let them know that Danny did exist and give them this information. Or the person themselves traveling through O'Hare Airport often stop and pick up the phone right there and say, I'm looking at your billboard. I've never heard of suit up. Can you tell me more? So we do a wide range of media and campaigns, the device program that we just discussed. We'll also do a lot of travel grants. We want families to be educated on epilepsy, and that's not easy all the time to be caring for family members. Some with, there's very different levels of epilepsy with different severity levels. And some it's very hard for them to get to different places and different conferences. So we'll provide the travel grants to help them get to one of our biggest ones is called Epilepsy Awareness Day at Disneyland, which is.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. It brings a smile on my face just saying it.
Yeah.
It is 2 days of the biggest conference I've ever been at, the biggest expo, every resource you could want, need, or learn about. And that's followed by a day in the park with everybody in a matching purple shirt. We kind of take over Main Street, we say. And it's a fantastic organization out of Anaheim area, led by Brad and Candy Levy and the Epilepsy Alliance and Sophia's Journey, like Ashley mentioned, there are so many advocacy groups doing fantastic things. So we partner with them to help families get there. We've had over 35 families went just this past year, and I believe it was in November.
Wow.
And then we have a program that is an annual conference that we co-host, and again, working with other fantastic organizations like the Epilepsy Foundation, a group called BAN Foundation, Cure Epilepsy, to provide what's called the Partners Against Mortality and Epilepsy Conference once a year. It's a day and a half, and it brings all the stakeholders to the table, families included. Ashley has been there and gives her patient view. Caroline has joined us I've met Caroline a couple of times now. It is doctors, researchers, nurses, medical examiners, families, all sitting in technical companies now too with these devices, all sitting together talking about mortality and epilepsy and what changes need to be made and how do we do that. So that's another example of ways we spend the funds, and as another example of how we partner with wonderful groups. It's epilepsy is a group like no other that I've seen information sharing. It is so needed, and it is it's just heartwarming. And I'm sure Ashley can speak to that too, just the how she has other moms in her life that go have children with epilepsy, and the amount of information that they share with each other is fantastic, and it really does result in better lives and safer outcomes as well. I went a little long there, but the funding I have to mention is 100% because of people who give gifts. We have supporters, donors who read the feedback from a mom that we post on our website, dannydid.org, about the impact that this device brought to their home, and the peace of mind, the independence. Some of the teenagers wear them to school, and it's the first time mom and dad have let them go to a football game by themselves or a sleepover party, because they can be alerted if a seizure's happening, even when they're not in the same house. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in bringing that peace and sleep, which is could be a trigger for many families, lack of sleep could cause seizures. So now that they're getting a good night's sleep because they're monitored in the bedroom with the device that would wake them up. So we have galas, of course, a large fundraiser once a year in Chicago. But we have a marathon team that runs through the streets of Chicago raising awareness and funds. And we have, smaller events here and there. And then, mm-hmm. of course, just donors who believe in our cause, and we can't say enough about them.
That's amazing. You know, one of the questions that just popped in my head that I should have asked earlier, is there an age range where this problem occurs most often? Or is this something that can follow a patient their entire life?
Well, that's what's so frustrating about epilepsy, is that it doesn't discriminate. There's no age bracket. It can happen as young as four, as Caroline mentioned. It can happen when you're 80 years old. You can have your first seizure. It does not matter. And SUDEP is still being studied. Danny passed away when he was four. We know of my friends who have lost a husband, so adults. And what SUDEP is still being researched, and it's defined as, when somebody that has epilepsy passes away, usually doing something, in another illness has to be, there's no other illness that could have led to or injury that could have led to the death. So that's why the autopsy is important piece of that. And it's also Danny died in his sleep, unfortunately, in a bunk bed with his older brother. And so that is often the case that we do hear that quite often, found prone mm-hmm. in the morning with some evidence of a seizure.
Sure.
Although we've learned that a seizure doesn't even have to take place for SUDEP. So it's still a lot of information needs to be in research.
I'm absolutely amazed that you say it can even be seen in adults. I think we think of SIDS, as kind of another kind of thing that can occur, but this is a lifetime possibility.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, we've got just a few minutes before we're done. And Ashley, I'd love have you tell our listeners how you found the Danny Did Foundation. And Mary has certainly talked about some of the ways that you've been involved. So if you and or Caroline want to jump in here, how did you find them to begin with?
Sure. I worked for Cure Epilepsy, which is an epilepsy research foundation in Chicago. And have stayed in touch and supported them over the years since I moved positions. And I found out about the Danny Did Foundation through CURE, because as Mary mentioned, they have a strong relationship. And specifically, also as Mary mentioned, I saw that the Danny Did Foundation offers travel grants to families, and they were the reason then that Caroline was able to attend Epilepsy Awareness Day at Disney, which, you know, you as you might imagine, was a big thrill, and you know, certainly combines travel with the expo and information and resources and just being around other families who are facing similar challenges. So since then, they've also provided a travel grant for me to attend the PAMI conference, which is the only conference that puts caregivers, clinicians, advocates in the same room during conference sessions. So we can really interact and really find out the latest research, the latest medication, the latest state and national efforts around increased funding for epilepsy research. So it's invaluable, invaluable to me, the help that Danny did provides. And I've also run the Chicago Marathon to benefit Danny did twice now. Sure. So, you know, definitely supporting this organization brings, you know, resources and detection devices and just much connection to families with loved ones with epilepsy.
That's an amazing impact. Oh, my gosh. Mary, in the last minute or so that we have left, how can people find the foundation?
Sure. We are at, it's pretty easy, it's DannyDid.org. One way to remember that is the last line of Danny's obituary, which was written by his father, stated, "Please go and enjoy your life, Danny Did." And that became our foundation name, Mike and Marianne's foundation name for their son. And again, the best way I would start would be DannyDid.org, where you can find our contact us page, our application, our info. You can either email us or find our phone number. And we're also pretty active on social media as well for any type of announcements and grants and things like that. So really just, again, encouraging families who have epilepsy to have this very important conversation with their doctor about SUDEP. There are ways that you can mitigate the risk. And until that cure is found, we just hope that these conversations happen, and that if you would like a help in any fashion, please just do contact us, and we will definitely share everything we know.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a fascinating conversation. I appreciate all of you being here, and I want to thank all of our listeners for being with us today on Community Matters. We'll talk to you again soon.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
This year's Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues headliner is South African musician Jonathan Butler. Butler has been described as one of the 50 greatest guitarists of all time, and his music was said to have inspired Nelson Mandela during his time in prison. Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues is Saturday, August 17th at Kenosha's Lakefront. Tickets are available at MahoneFund.org or at Tanuta's Deli.
When the summer came, you were not around. Now the summer's gone.
Support comes from the Racine Symphony, pairing music, wine, and food at the next Musical Flights, Friday evening, February 21st, at Uncorked in downtown Racine, featuring a woodwind quintet and raffle prizes under a romance theme. Tickets at racinesymphony.org.
I'm Gregory Berg, and my guest on Monday's morning show is Buddy Levy, author of a fascinating new book called Realm of Ice and Sky, Triumph, Tragedy, and History's Greatest Arctic Rescue. Buddy Levy chronicles the first attempts in the early 20th century to reach the North Pole by the air, by airplane, and even by dirigible. Some of those efforts ended in tragedy. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine.